minute.
Welcome to the House of Static, where we talk to artists about their art and what moves them, with your hosts, Kilo House in Los Angeles and The Static Dive in New York.
Right on.
Yeah. Well, hey, Kilo, since this is only the second episode and nobody knows who the hell we are, we'll say real quick who we are, right? All right. So, anyway, this is the House of Static. And named so for my friend Kilo House and myself. I'm Bob Smith, also known as the Static Dive. So there you go. That's why we're the House of Static. We're a couple of musicians, obviously, right? Making our tunes, and we're talking to other artists about their art and what they do and why they do it and how they do it and everybody else. So Kilo, why don't you introduce yourself and our guests?
Yeah, I'm Kilo House. I kind of have been working on this genre called Terror Trap for about 2 years now. I don't know. I make music with lots of bass in it. I like experimenting with shit, and I like horror movies and doing fun stuff like that. So,
and Kilo's in LA, and I'm in New York. Yeah. And there you go. So Kilo, introduce Malachi. How about that?
This is Malachi. He taught me at a school called Icon Collective, which you guys have probably seen my interviews from them. And he taught both of my studio tech classes, right?
Probably, yeah.
And is my friend and taught me a lot of cool shit, kind of taught me about life. One of the things I really remember is the last day of school after my last final, we were talking about one of my remixes and how it was doing good. And I was like, yay, excited. And he was like, but remember, bro, you don't want to find the golden egg. You want to find the golden goose that shits out the golden egg.
Yeah, you got it right on.
And it's always stuck with me like that. And I'm just like, you know, you got to keep people like him around that inspire you and teach you things like you, Bob, you know, like that make you a better person, better producer. So, yeah.
Right on.
And that's why we're interviewing him first, because we love, you know, his music, and we like the vibe that he brings. We want to bring that kind of vibe to people, and we know that you will enjoy his music. Just wait.
I can say I'm honored. Like, thank you for you know, the kind words, and just like knowing that the work that I'm doing is actually making a difference. Mm-hmm. That's like the best thing in the world. So
that's pretty.
Yeah, dude, your shit is dope too, Bob.
You know what? I'll do because I don't know Malachi, right? I'm just meeting Malachi for the first time right now. But I did do a little bit of research on it, because in addition to the music, I have a music blog that I write called, it's called The Static Dive. So this is kind of what I do. I look up people and I figure out where they're from, what they did. So I can tell you that I know that Malachi went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. Which is, if you haven't heard of it, you probably have, because about the best music school in the country. You know, you got like Berklee and Juilliard and a couple others, and that's it. I know Malachi worked at Interscope Records, Universal Interscope. And I know that obviously Malachi taught at Icon Collective, and now you're teaching somewhere else, right, Malachi?
Yes, I teach at 1500 Sound Academy.
There you go. And you have your own production company.
Yes.
There you go. So now I've done my introduction from the resume. So
there it is.
There it is. Right on. So anyway, we did prepare some kind of questioning and organization to this. And if anybody watched the first episode, they'll know that Kilo and I tend to go on tangents and talk about philosophy and rock and roll and drugs and whatever else we feel like talking about. But we'll get started like professionally here with a couple of questions. So. We did the introductions. We talked about this, our second episode. Why don't we get into, you alluded a little bit, Kilo, to, you know, how you guys know each other, but why don't you talk a little bit about your experience at Icon, you know, both of yours, you know what I mean? Like, your experience with Malachi, and Malachi, tell us, you know, what's up? What'd you do there?
Yeah. How weird you thought I was. Yes. Okay. So Malachi came my second or third semester. Right. He came one of the
two. Oh my God. Okay, go ahead.
Sure. I'm trying. Come on, man.
It's all a blur for me.
I prepared this years ago. Don't worry. So he taught me in classes, and then I think we became friends from smoking cigarettes, right?
Or
being outside near the cigarette smoking place. And he really helped inspire me in a lot of ways. Like one thing I very much remember to this day of producing earlier, right before you got here, was when in our when we were doing something we called office hours, where we sat in a big giant room called the producer's den, and we would show each other music and songs. That's what Malachi was doing. I don't know if you remember this story.
Go ahead.
But I brought this song to him that I thought was like the world's best banger in the world, which it has never come out, by the way. But I brought it to him and I showed him, and he was like, oh, that's dumb. But he said, but I'd like to hear certain parts where there is no bass, so that when the bass does come in, it feels more heavy.
Yeah,
and at the moment, I was like, I want bass everywhere. Give me all the bass to the face. But then becoming a better producer, that has very much stuck with me, where it's like, you're right, there are certain spots where you need to use less sound to no sound. And if it weren't for this man, my bass would not hit as hard, because that's one of the biggest reasons it does, is I give it space. So, yeah.
You know, that. When you told me about that the other day, Kilo and Malachi, I'd love to hear what you think about this. But that reminded me of like any great jazz guy, I'll tell you that, right? Like you know, Miles Davis is big on, like, you know, music is the space between the notes. You know, what matters is the you gotta let your music breathe. You gotta have some room for it to float around the room, so people kind of pick up on it and find their place in it. So
for sure,
yeah, that's the thing you talk about jazz. That's where I got the lesson. When I was a jazz musician, I would just solo like crazy,
right.
You know, and I'd sit down all happy that everyone was applauding, and my jazz teacher, while he's still conducting, would lean into my ear and say, you know, a rest is a note too, right?
Yeah, there you go, man. That's it. Exactly.
I was like, yo, he got me.
I remember vividly you saying, I think it was you saying, that when you go to Berkeley, you have to learn how to write music too.
You have to learn everything. You have to learn to conduct.
Why the fuck do I need to know this?
Well, I already knew how to do it. They were like, so many classes on conducting, writing, like everything about music that you want to do, except for what I really wanted to do, which was make bangers.
Right.
I'm like, can I make Timbaland now? No? Okay.
No, not yet.
How about now? No? Okay.
No.
So I think part of being a producer in today's world is really like discovering on your own how to do this.
Oh yeah.
And only the self-starters make it, you know. So
yeah,
people like yourself, you know, you just sit in your room and you just make music all the time.
We're all sitting right now.
Yeah.
Okay, and there you go.
How it works.
Yeah.
But it's I agree. I mean, I'll agree mainly because, you know, that's all I've ever done, right? I mean, I just kind of taught myself, and I've been doing it for God knows how many years. But if I had gone to Berkeley, I maybe would have been able to cut maybe 10, 15 years off the beginning of the trip, you know,
right.
You know, learn a few things. Maybe. I don't know. Like, you know about the bass. But, hey, rock on.
It depends on what you wanted to do. Like, if you wanted to make something that they don't teach, then it probably would have added more years onto it.
Right on.
That's so true. There's certain things I find out to this day that I'm like I was doing something weird and warping the other day, and like figured something out. I was like, why the fuck did they not teach me just to do this? Oh. Like, this made it so much easier and faster, even with my own computer, that I was like, and why did we learn the hard thing? But, you know.
Sometimes that's all there is. I you know, when I learned how to auto-tune, they didn't have a certain tool that lets you just draw it. And then when the new version came out that, like, literally cut the amount of time, I want to say by a fifth amount of time to do it, I showed it to the guy that taught me, and he cursed at me.
Really?
Because he knew now that he was obsolete.
Right.
You know? Right. It was like, yeah, why would he teach that? Yeah. So it's just like, you know, dang. So,
yeah,
funny. But you know what, man? I mean, that's not the right way to go. You know, I mean, that guy, not you. I mean, the you know, the guy getting mad about it. It's like, you got to roll with the, you know, the life, and it's constantly changing, whether it's music or technology or, you know, the people you meet walking down the street. Things change constantly. Oh, you just disappeared, man.
Yeah, because it's low battery, but it's plugged in.
Oh, there you go.
Don't worry, everybody. We got it. We're going to figure it out, I think.
Well, I can see you now.
Yeah, while he figures it out, you can keep asking questions.
Yeah.
All right, right on. Cool.
What were You're not saying? There. The
oh, yeah. Well, I was saying, you know, that guy, or the teacher you were talking to, that's sort of closed-minded, you know, living with blinders on, you know, mentality. It's not gonna work in life. Doesn't work in art, that's for sure. You know what I mean? You go you find a cool new tool, man. Dive in, dig it. You know what I mean? Sure. Not this, I don't like that because it's, you know, it's against what, you know, what I'm teaching or what right. I'm making. You know, that's how I'm getting paid.
Job security, though. They all want job security. They want to I spent the time and money on this thing. I want to make sure I get the most out of it.
Right.
I don't want to have to sell it and buy another thing.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But
it makes sense. But yeah, that's art, though. I think art is all about, especially because art is a liberal thing, right? So you can't be conservative about it. You have to be moving forward, thinking forward.
Got to change, man. You got to.
I remember when Chico, one of our friends, told me about like Apple Music was the new thing. And I was like, you're wrong. And he told me like, they're going to start putting a volume cap on Spotify. And I was like, you're wrong. He was right about everything he told me that I thought was dumb. So it's like in our industry, everything just moves so fast that you kind of miss it. And you're like, for instance, it's like Ableton 11 now, right? Or like
10.
Still, I don't even know what mine is. It's like,
I've seen a box for 9 right over there.
Yeah, Ableton 9. So, you know, I mean, that's how fast it moves. I thought I was doing good, but then it's like, oh, new Ableton, new Ozone, new whatever.
Yeah, that Ozone keep coming out every year, man. I'm like,
not paying that much every year.
New computer every year.
Yeah. Macs are like that too. You know, you got to get new Macs. You can't just ride on this old. You got an old Mac, Kilo. I know that. And you were saying you can't even install any applications on it.
No, not at all.
Or we would be just they shut them down, basically.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
dude. So back to how I know Malachi. After I graduated and told me the golden shitting goose thing. We started hanging out and going to this like.
I just want to see a golden shitting goose now. I mean,
yeah, I know. When I
have to draw a picture,
when I find it, I'm supposed to keep it, like he told me. So we'll work on that.
Right on.
But me and him started going to this like bar once a week. Remember that one?
Which is it? The Mint? No.
The one with the poet, the big painting of the poet outside.
Oh, yeah, that was the Mint. We go to the Mint for the Honey Pot.
Yeah, the Honey Pot, that's what it's called. So the Honey Pot is dope. So we used to go there, and I used to get smash and then not drive myself home, which is smart. But now I don't drink anymore, and I don't drink Malachi James.
Yeah, I'm not a drinker.
We'll definitely talk about that aspect of being a producer and artist in this interview.
We're not going to talk about drinking. That's fine.
No. We will talk about it later in the interview.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about it now.
I mean, we can transition.
Talked about drinking, man. You opened it up. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
So as an artist, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I feel like whatever we put into our bodies, such as media, social media, no media, religion, sex, drugs, those words don't usually go together. Anything you pick like that.
It depends on your religion.
Whatever you are consuming, you are going to shit out.
All right. I like that.
Yeah, right. There you go. So, I told you, we get deep on here sometimes.
We're all on the same page then.
Yeah, because they always say you are what you eat, but I think they should say you are what you consume.
Right.
Yeah. It's not just your food. Exactly. It's also, you know, substances. It's also media.
Right.
You know, whatever you consume becomes your spirit. Right. Becomes who you are.
Right. Yeah. And I would love to know what certain things inspired you to write what you do, even if you don't know. For instance, like, I write horror-based music just because I've lived a lot of horror in my life and that feels comfortable to me to make. So it's like, to me, it's not depressing or sad or evil or angry. It feels normal to me. And I think even though not every artist can identify what it was that made them write the music they write, there is an underlying reason behind it. So what are your thoughts on all of it?
So my brand is empowering artists to create art the world deserves.
Nice.
I believe that art is the way that the people get to tell the history, right? Because if you read the history books, it's written by whoever won the war.
That's right.
Right.
So it's like, all right, so if you want to know from like what really was going on, you've got to dig up, you know, poetry, whatever you can find from those people.
Right.
Because artists don't usually win the war. they're not the right one.
We're definitely not the strongest ones.
Right. We're going to smoke weed and say, let's just chill, man.
Yeah, man. Be peaceful,
come
man.
On,
yeah.
My goal is to empower everyone to tell their actual story. In my life and my music, I want to also inspire people to tell their story. So does that make sense? So
sure.
I'm going to be authentic in my music.
That makes so much sense.
And I want to make sure that everyone, after listening to my music, is in a better mood than they were when they listened to it.
Right.
So specifically for me, like I have two brands. One is about confidence, mm-hmm. you know, and I just exude confidence in it because I want people to listen to it and be more confident.
Right.
And the other one is about intimacy. Because they always say sex sells, but the truth is I feel like intimacy is what everyone really
connection.
Wants. Yeah. Because if I said, hey, there's two homeless guys going at it behind a dumpster, nobody's going to want to see that.
Right.
So it's not
so, well, somebody does, there's, but not
somebody,
me.
there's a market for that.
Yeah, but if you see a father and a daughter just hugging and embracing each other,
right.
that's beautiful.
Right.
So I have a brand that's all about intimacy, and that brand is doing very well.
Nice.
So that's kind of what informs my music and what I do. I consume that stuff.
Right, and then that's what I was going to ask. What do you purposely consume in your everyday life to make you be able to produce the product that you desire?
So now we're talking drugs?
Sure. Like we said, it can be any way
you want. How do you interpret the question?
All right, so I'm a big fan of cannabis. That is definitely my drug of choice.
We are in California.
Yes, and you know, I fought it my whole life because, you know, drugs are bad, including. I grew up thinking that, and then I was around all these successful Black people who every single one of them, I don't think I've met a single successful Black man that does not smoke cannabis.
Right on.
And so I was like, all right, like, there must be something to this. And I immediately, once I started smoking, was like, okay, I get it. Like, when you're doing art, you can be way more present. You can hear way more things.
Oh, yeah.
And then also just in life, it gives you the ability to like be like, it's not that big a deal. I'm going to just chill and figure this out.
Right.
So, you know, that's my, you know, I definitely am pro cannabis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You won't get any, detractors here on that point. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I think less and less every day. It's right. risky to say that.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. It's even legal in New York now.
Yeah. I know. I'm from New York. When I left New York, they had to stop and frisk where they were throwing people in jail for it. So to me, it's crazy that New York is just like, yeah, we're just smoking it now.
Right.
It's a weird thing, but
you
know, it's cool. Like I was listening to a lot of what you were saying. I was listening to all of what you're saying, but what really kind of clicked with me there when you were talking about your brand and like you're consuming intimacy so you can put it back out. And, you know, Gil and I talked about this before too, how, you know, I like this question of like, why do you create? What is it that motivates you to be at the beginning and also currently? Right. And one of the reasons I like it is because I never really knew what was motivating me. You know what I mean? I kind of was just making, I was making music because I was a weird ADD kid and I drank too much. And I just, all of that came out of me. So now I go back and listen, and I've been making music for 30 years, right? So I'll go back and listen to that stuff. Some really brilliant stuff. But you're gonna, you know, you want to slit your wrists when you're listening to it because that kid is so sad and depressed and lonely and drunk. You know, and that's what I was putting out. It's what I'm putting in. It's what I'm putting out. You suck down a depressant all day long, and then you know you're just gonna make depressing shit. So now I don't do any of that, right? I don't drink. I'm vegan. I'm all kinds of. So I'm putting healthy things in. Now I'm making kind of cool tunes. You know, so I like that. I like the notion of like being inspired by by your own life, you know, by yeah. how you mold yeah. your life, that molds your art. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's definitely, I know some people, I listen to their music and I'm like, oh, this person needs a hug. You know, and it's
right.
Just,
yeah. Right.
I want to make sure whatever I put into the world, you know, makes people happier. Because that I would think that's the goal for most people, is to be more happy today than they were yesterday.
Sure.
Nice. Most people, right? So if that's the case, then how do I contribute to that?
Right. You
know? That's awesome. Love it.
Now, do you feel like when something inspires you, do you feel like it's a noticeable inspiration more often than not, or something that you don't even realize is inspiring you to write the music that you make? Such as weed, you know, obviously will alter the way your brain is thinking, so you make different music. But other things, such as someone flipping you off in traffic, maybe you don't know that that's why you wrote that song.
Maybe
yesterday that said "fuck you," and you're like, "I'm not even mad," but you were. You just didn't know it. Which one do you both feel is the more valid answer?
That's an interesting question. I never thought about this. I think when I sit down to work, because I don't get to work on it every day because I have so many things I'm doing. I used to be able to make music all day every day, and that was kind of that would make more sense. But now right. when I sit down, I don't have the luxury of going, right. am I inspired? Right. It's like, look, I got 6 hours right now.
You got some work to do, right?
Yeah, I've got to figure this out.
Right.
But what I've been doing is I just go, how do I feel right now?
Right.
You know, what is inside of me? Mm-hmm. What emotion, what feeling? And then what story can I tell that would be true to that emotion and feeling?
Right.
The story doesn't have to be authentic. It doesn't have to be mine, but the feeling has to be authentic.
Right.
So like I'm thinking of a specific time, beginning of the pandemic, I'm dating a woman, and the relationship, I can feel she's starting to exit, you know,
mm-hmm.
y'all know what that feeling is.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in the bed, not very happy. So I'm like, you know what? I got to write, some rhymes anyway. I have this horrible feeling in my gut. I'm going to use this feeling.
Right.
So I ran into the other room. I pulled up the mic. I did a bunch of melodies on top of a Juice WRLD track.
Nice.
You know, talk about feelings, right?
Right.
And then I literally just told the story of where I was in that moment with that woman.
That's
literally beautiful. Told that story, yeah. Because I'm like, I have these feelings anyway. I might as well use it to make something people can connect to. Right. And when I listen back to it, it's really dope. I got to finish this song and actually make a track.
Well, how are you going to finish it if you don't feel the same emotion?
Well, yeah. I have the everything is there. You know, I just got to make new music for it. So I can't use Juice WRLD's track.
Right.
You know, so if I can, you know, make that happen and I can get myself anywhere. I'm a really good actor now at this point.
We were talking about being actors earlier.
Yeah, we're all actors. Yeah. You know, like right, if you're sad and you got to make a happy song, you got to get yourself happy. You know, if you're happy and you got to make a sad song, you got to make yourself sad.
Right. Right.
I can make myself cry almost on command because I've been doing this so long. So yeah, I'll get back in and I'll finish that.
Well, I was going to say it's like playing live, right? You know, because I mean, I play in bands and stuff. I'm a guitar player, obviously, right? So. And yeah, you're going from song to song. You know, I'll play 30 songs in a night. Well, I'm not, you know, and one of them's real happy. The next one's depressing as hell. The next one's happy. And right. you got to dive in and whether it's acting or kind of, I don't know, channeling, you know what I mean? That emotion for that time period, you got to do it or else, you know, it's not authentic. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can't just have one emotion the whole time while the music changes. You got to go up and down with it.
Yeah, right. Sing the song about, like, you know, depression with a smile on your face. You can't, hey!
Yeah, right.
I'm going to sit by this.
I never really thought of that because, I mean, I'm a DJ and I was a metal drummer, so I never thought, like, if you make music that's not one emotion, which is fuck your face hard, then you have to be able to dive into that emotion at the moment. Like if they, say Blink 182 was playing Adam's song and they did like a dick joke in the middle of that song, no one would like them ever again.
No.
Because it's a song about depression and suicide.
That's right.
Then you made a dick joke. Well, how are you going to snap yourself out of that, you know, fart joke mentality? I've never really had to think about that being in the genres I've played, but that would be difficult in my opinion.
Yeah, you got to commit 110% to whatever that feeling is. You know, I hate when people do the song Pony by Genuine. but they don't commit to the sex of it. Like, that song is right. sex.
Right.
And if you're not, if you're going to do it any other emotion other than sex, I'm not going to. No one's going to like it. It's going to be cheesy.
No one's
going
to like it.
But people do it all the time. Every time I see someone do a cover, they're just like, if you're horny, let's do it. And I'm like, no, no, what are you doing? You got, if you're not trying to make the people in front of you want to make love to you, do not do this song.
Right.
And I feel that goes for every song. If you're not trying to make the people in front of you feel that feeling, don't do that song.
Sure. What about you, Bob? What do you think inspired you more? Or how do you think you get your inspiration? Cognitively or uncognitively?
I would, you know, we've talked a little bit about this before, but everything I do is improv, right? Like I improvise when I'm writing, I improvise when I'm playing live. That is just how I approach music. So like, obviously whatever emotion I'm feeling is going into what I'm writing. Right. But I'm completely unconscious of it, right? I just play, right? And I got that little cheap piano back there. I write almost everything on that thing. It's hooked up to my iPad and it's always set to it's got a chord gap on there with the piano on. And I just walk up and I just, you know, noodle around and I get my phone and I record it. And then later on, maybe 2 months later, I'll listen, because I've got hundreds of these things on my phone, and I'll go back and listen to those things to go, well, shit, what was I doing there? You know, like, what was I feeling? Like, and I'll name them weird things, and it'll be like, you know, I don't know, birdhouse or something, you know, and then it'll trigger some memory. And then I kind of recreate that for myself when I go and just say, this is a good one, I'm going to record it, you know, and then I get to sit down in the studio, start tracking, and then it becomes something. So it's almost like my past self from 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, or 20 years ago, inspiring me now to go and do something new. That's kind of how I do it.
That's cool.
And especially some of the stuff that, that's a lot of the stuff that we're doing now, because Kilo and I do music together, which is cool as hell. Because like I do mostly, like most of my stuff is either I do a lot of trip hop stuff, and then I do a lot of like alternative rock stuff, right? Kind of mellow, hippie, psychedelic alternative rock stuff. And none of that is what Kilo does, but I've been giving him my tracks and he mixes them up. And I tell everybody that listens to this story. The first song I gave to Kilo, he remixed it for me and I got a record deal. So we're in, man. That's a true story. And
you can thank Malachi for how good I am at mixing and mastering.
There you go, man.
That's right, hilarious. On. Thank you.
You did a great job. I am actually good.
You did a great job.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But my point of bringing that up is exactly that. It's an example of, because a lot of times I'm taking songs, I've written hundreds, right? And I'll go back and listen to these old songs I wrote maybe a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I go, hey, that was a good one. And I did a shitty recording of it. Maybe I was drunk. Maybe I didn't play as well back then, whatever. Right. So I'll re-record it. And now I'm like, you know, I'll track it and I just give the stems to Kilo and he'll go nuts on it. Maybe he speeds it up. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he drops some bass on it or whatever. But it's that initial, like spark from a long time ago, inspiring both Kilo and I to create something new. It's fun.
For sure.
And it's also good for me because I don't drink anymore and I haven't drank for 5 years now. I write less lyrics now than I used to because I'm not, I don't have, you know,
right.
write lyrics like, when you got shit on your mind. I'm pretty happy, you know? So, I'll go pull some of those old ones out. Anyway, I'm rambling. Go ahead.
I'm going to cheat on this question a little bit because I did not give you option three, letter three. But I find that my method is when I write a song or do a remix or anything, that track will show me what my emotion is by me hearing it. So it's like me talking to me and saying, hey, bro, like, for instance, for my music these days, it's like, hey, bro, you're going through this or that. Like, you know, you are grieving about this. Not that I write sad music by any means, but to me, that's how it makes me perceive the way I wrote it. And so it makes me go, okay, I need to kind of think about this. And I think I shared with Bob before that I put a little secret little sound bites or sounds or something in my music to talk to myself. like a Easter egg. So for instance, in one of my new remixes, it's not a funny song, but in the end, before the last drop, it says something like, "I will never take movement for granted ever again," or something like that. And it's kind of me talking to myself about being in the ICU and remembering that feeling when I didn't know if I'd ever move again. And it's like, I'm putting that in there for me. And if you heard it, even though you know me, you'd be like, "Why did you put that stupid thing there?" It's like, I'm talking to myself, reminding myself of things. Mm-hmm. And I think I used to do that subconsciously because of what I just said, which is that's the way I identify with my emotions, is, oh, this is what you're thinking. I think you both can agree. I think one thing is it really shows what your overlying repetitive thoughts are, mm-hmm. right? So you can have a bad day and still write a happy song. I agree. But you can't be depressed and write only happy songs.
Right.
Emotion will leak through whether you want it to or not. So if, you know, if you're writing music that's like talking about like you're going to murder everybody and it's not a metal band, obviously, then like you might want to go and talk to a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that would be the best plan. I don't know. That was kind of a cheat answer for me because that's neither of the options, but that is how I feel about how I do.
Yeah.
So, right, you like a litmus test.
Sure. Yeah. It's very much, oh, why was I feeling that way? Oh, what was I so excited about that day? Oh, what? Who did I hate that? You know, like, right, but luckily I am a stable personality. So I kind of write the same type of music most often.
You're pretty consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I guess, even though I used to hate this as a kid and never want to be like this, I'm kind of more like a kiddie pool than a wave pool or an ocean, where like my highs aren't all the way peaking and my lows aren't all the way peaking, but it's like, it's kind of a steady thing in the middle. And it's like, yeah, that's why I can write consistent. Oh, don't worry.
It's just that we're sponsored by iPhone. That's what you guys don't see it, but it shows up as iPhone on the screen. All right, there you go. Yeah, I can see you now.
This can go. Yeah. We got it. Don't worry, guys.
I got you.
Okay,
right.
And I have a connector.
We'll edit all this out.
Oh, good.
Also,
yeah. Just center it, and act like we were yelling at each other.
There you go.
Or just bring it back in at that part.
I don't know if I can plug this.
Hey, can I do?
I can do the USB. I can't do the big thing.
Perfect.
That'd be great if it came. We cut it. It goes black, and then it comes back, and you guys are getting your like ripped shirts. And you're all messed up because you're throwing down.
Right.
I don't even know if it's working.
Can see you.
I don't know if it's like getting juice, but whatever.
We'll find out when it does the same thing.
And that's the end of our show.
Right, and they never were heard from again.
Before it just turns all the way off.
Yeah,
right.
It's good now. Okay,
cool.
Yeah,
so we should probably, why don't we bring it back around to again, I told you, you know, this interview like format of ours is very loose, but it works. Right. But we will go back to our questions for a second here, right? So what do we say?
But I want to get to the question that I've wanted to know ever since I decided I could ask you anything.
Well, there you go.
Which, don't be afraid.
All right.
Or be very afraid.
I'm terrified. Let's go.
Don't worry. What got you into music? See, it's not that bad. What made you, unless your answer is like Chris, what made you want to make music? Kind of the whole gist of you and music, right? So what was a song that inspired you right off the bat or something? And you were music, anything like that. Like what's your first favorite song? Let us know inside.
All right. Well, when it comes to like playing music, I just fell in love with the saxophone when I was in fourth grade. You know, they give you like the sheet with all the instruments. And I remember looking at it and going, which one will get the panties off the quickest?
See, here we go. That's where I knew that.
What do you think? I got all these guitars back here. Man.
Yeah, see? I mean, everyone's motivated by something. So, you know, I played sax, but then I remember listening to the Genuine album. The Bachelor, and that was the first time I understood what a producer was, because Tim did the whole album. Nice. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like, he is in charge of this whole project. I want to be able to do that one day. And then when I went to college, I stopped playing music. I left my sax at home, and I was like, look, I got to get serious. It's time to make money. So I went to school for computer engineering, and I hated it. Mm-hmm. Or I just hated the experience. And Kanye West came to the school with his college dropout tour, which still to this day, so confusing why a college would hire someone who was poor was called college dropout.
That's great.
And he made so much sense. Everything he said, he just kept going on rants about how we're trying to live our parents' life.
True.
And I was like, I am definitely living into the dream that my parents have, not mine. Yeah. So shortly after that, I dropped out, and I decided, I think one thing that made it easy for me to drop out, I was really depressed in college. It was the first time I ever failed any classes. I've been a straight A student. I skipped a grade. School was my thing. Right. When I got to college, and I was just like, what is this? I don't like it. It's not fun. It was so lame.
The answer right off the bat, what is, I don't like it. I mean, that's the answer, right? This is not for me.
It's not for me.
That's right.
Yeah, and I took, so to cope with it, I started making beats in my bedroom. That was the first time I started actually making beats. I had Reason, and I literally just started making beats. And
I used Reason. I love Reason. Reason was
It was an easy gateway drug to get in there. No, yeah. It was very small, short, learning
curve. No FL Studio heroin for you?
I tried, but the Reason took quicker. So I just stayed. I probably should have did
FL. Reason was cool. Reason was cool.
Yeah, program. It was easy. And because I was a composer, I would compose everything in a different program, all the MIDI, and then I would just export the MIDI, put it in. I'd never played anything, and then I had a whole song. I just put new sounds to it. So once I had that pop in, my roommate told all of the rappers at the school. And next thing you know, every week I had a different rapper coming to record with me. Right. I went and bought a microphone, and I was like, yo, I like this. It's fun. It's challenging. And it creates community around me. Mm-hmm. So I think I finished the first full song I did, which was a theme song for the show that everyone watched at school. It was like the only show anyone watched. It was called Stony Brook Uncut. So I made the beat, and then I actually ended up rapping on it, which was something I thought was ever going to happen. And I was like, I could do this. I could totally do this. So I dropped out and went to sign up for Berkeley. And that was the beginning of me like, all right, I'm committing 100% to I'm going to be a music guy.
That's cool. Where'd you grow up in New York anyway, Malachi?
Hempstead, Long Island.
I know where that's right. I'm upstate. I'm up kind of north of Albany, but I go down to the city a lot. So I know. And I've been to Hempstead.
Yeah, Hempstead's dope. I miss it. I do miss it. Every time I go back, it's like, what? This is not the same place. What's going on?
Right. So, yeah, but, I know that feeling.
Yeah, it's really weird. I miss it. But,
on a good point Malachi made, whether anybody else caught it or not, is sometimes when everything shits the bed at once and you're depressed or some bunch of shit happens, you have nothing more to lose. So that's how I became a producer. Losing my dog, losing my car, losing my girlfriend, still living with my girlfriend without my dog or my car. Nothing could have really gone worse to me.
Got nothing to lose.
So it's like, of course I'm going to sit in my apartment and make beats that I don't know how to make that don't sound like music because I got nothing else to lose. And sometimes that bottom of the barrel is the entire sky, or I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that describes basically my life up until about the age of 29. I mean, I never had anything to lose. You know, I grew up pretty poor and like I said, pretty drunk. So didn't have a lot going on. It was, it was making me, I was same as you, but I was really good at school. That was my saving grace. And I like making music, all kinds of music, everything. But I constantly wrote because nothing else, nothing to lose, man. I'm going to be a rock star because nothing else to do.
Yeah. I think that's really the key is when you don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah. I can definitely say I'm the producer I am now because I went homeless. I lost everything. I really didn't have anything. And I was in my car. And I didn't have anything to lose. So I started taking bigger risks. Like I started my own company and then I could say no to stuff because I didn't have to worry about my rent. You know, like people were like, hey, you got to do this for exposure. No, I don't.
Fuck off.
It's like, I'm not out. Like,
I'm just learning all that now, you know, because I just quit by, I worked in corporate America for years and years. And I played music the whole time, but I had this corporate job sitting at a desk and I just quit it a few, like, I don't know, 6-7 months ago. And started my own business, started, you know, and it's a weird thing to get used to think like, I can actually do whatever the hell I want. You know what I mean? Like I can go, I can, you know, I can work all night. I can sleep all day. I can talk to this person if I want to, I cannot talk to that person if I don't want to. And, you know, fuck them if they don't like it, you know? Right. And that's a pretty great liberating feeling, you know, as you were saying, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Cause from the time you're a kid, your whole life is kind of dictated for you, you know, like you don't have the luxury of, you know, screwing around and messing things up. So when I finally got to a place where I could actually do that, it was really nice.
Yeah.
And before we get off the subject, I do want to get an answer to one part of that question that you get to answer. What was one of the first songs you remember going, I love music? Like I can remember All Star by, Smash Mouth was like, when I heard that song, I was like, music is fucking great. I love it.
The Shrek song?
Yeah. Kilo loves Smash Mouth.
I was not expecting you to say that.
Yeah, I tried. The first time you told me, I was like, you love Smash
Mouth? Really? I think I seem like the happy-go-lucky type of dude to enjoy something like that.
Well, it's not the happy-go-lucky part about it that's not believable. It's like the commercial, like...
Okay, but when she came out, it wasn't in Shrek right away.
Okay, that's fair.
Shrek. Hey, you know what? We are not shaming you for digging Smash Mouth. Surprising.
I'm surprised. I love it. My dad always calls me a paradox because I'll, for instance, write music with horror movie screams and people dying and stuff and say I'm doing it to make people happy.
And it is, it's like, fun. Your shit's fun.
People,
it's
maybe
fun.
Not.
It's true.
Yeah. So, but like, what's one of the songs at least that you can remember that you were like, fuck?
I'm thinking, there's a video of me, I hope. The tape is burned by this point.
We're going to find it.
My mom has it hidden somewhere. If it doesn't exist.
It's
a tape of me bottomless as I'm like 2.5, 3 years old.
You will not find it. We burned it for him.
Thank you.
He made the fire to put it in.
But I'm singing The Big Payback, James Brown, dancing around. Full energy. I'm a son of a man.
Oh, man. You know, like, stuff. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Apparently, I really loved that song every time it came on.
You were a smart kid. That's some good shit, man. That's awesome.
That's a good song, man. Oh, yeah. You know, he said, make love to my girlfriend. That ain't right. Like that song just spoke to me, man. It spoke to me.
But if you think about that, that's kind of the kind of vibe you give off in your music. Right, so it's like maybe what we start off by being inspired by, even though people think Shrek, whatever, fuck you. I do make music based off of movies, though. All of my inspiration comes from movies. Not that that has anything to do with Shrek, but maybe, maybe I should put a Shrek soundbite in. But no, right back to what you were saying about the music you make. You might make that because that's what lit the fire inside of your. Inside.
Well, my house is a musical house. Like when I went home last December, I was there for 4 months, and my parents have a dance party like every other night. It's just impromptu. Music will just be playing all the time, and they'll just start dancing together. And when I first started seeing it, I was like, wow, okay, this is a thing. And then like by the fifth time, I was ready. Like every time I'd hear the songs, I'm like, oh, they're about to start dancing.
Yeah. I got this.
You know, so, you know, my house was always like that. The amount of records that my mom and dad owned when I was a kid is astronomical. There's so many records.
Hey, there's a good question. What were they? Like what records did your parents play?
My dad's favorite is James Brown. So he's got so many James Brown records. That I'm like, how do you have all of these records from this one person? They liked Ohio Players, Zapp and Roger was a big one. My dad liked Michael Jackson was huge in our house. I'm trying to think of any other ones that just stand out. So those are the main ones.
Great, like 80s funk and R&B stuff. And
yeah, definitely was in that realm. They weren't really up on the new yet, but because I started listening to my own music and buying stuff, they started getting into the newer stuff too. But
yeah,
you know, I definitely remember the first time I could go and actually buy my own music. It was so liberating to just like explore and just check music out.
Oh man. There was this Christian bookstore, me and a Christian bookstore, back in my hometown that had a CD section. So it was all ratchet. You go and get the little thing and put it in the little like CD player up here. There wasn't even a Walkman, and then you'd plug the headphones in and you could just sit there and listen to music to see if you like it. But I would just sit in the store and listen to music until I had to go home.
Yeah.
But like, so that's how I found House, the band I listened to before when I was like really young. But it was like, that was like the best fun to me. That was like an amusement park. It was like, I found POD through that means. Like just these bands that we know now as big bands, but back then it was like, who the fuck is a POD? What's a POD?
POD, pod?
What's a pod? Like, come on, bro. But so, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting when you have the ability, even though it was all Christian music and stuff, I didn't give a fuck. You know, like when you have the ability, for instance, I will remember till the day I die, the first CD I went into a store by myself. This is when I was in a pushing wheelchair, not like a fun sex boy.
Wait a minute, what? Did you say a fun sex toy? What the hell are you doing on that thing?
Don't worry about it. not for you to know. For real though, like I went in and pushed my ass into the fucking mall, into FYE to buy Sum 41. And like, I was so happy. I went and bought it myself. My friends had it and I wanted it. And I went to get it before our vacation with my parents. Like, I still remember the first CD I ever made a conscious effort, more than a normal person's effort, to have.
That's awesome.
That's a freeing feeling for sure. Do you remember, Malika, the first song or album or single or thing that you were like, I gotta have this?
Gotta have?
No, you know what
I'm thinking. Well, no, because the thing that happened was I was getting hand-me-downs. So, like, I listened to, so first thing, the things that I know that I fell in love with first.
The first thing you picked out for yourself where you were like, okay, nobody's ever shown
Crisscross. That was first grade. I'm like, yo, Crisscross is so lit.
That's the Mac Daddy and the Daddy Mac, right?
Yep. Mac Daddy, Daddy Mac.
That's
awesome. Making it a Mac. And I wanted to dress like them. I wanted to have braids. I had earrings.
Did they have the kid play kind of flat tops?
They just had box.
Oh, that's right. They had the cornrows.
And then their clothes were oversized and backwards.
Right. That's so, right.
Yeah, you don't know about
this. I remember that.
I gotta put you on after this.
Maybe.
I gotta put you on.
I don't know, man. I gotta see this backwards shit.
That was the thing.
Yep.
Yeah. And they were like
all the way brand.
They were like the coolest kids ever, man. These two kids making the music together, just super confident and chill. I wanted to be like them so bad. So I would say that's the first thing that I chose. You know, but I did have like LL Cool J's album. I'm not gonna lie, like someone gave me that.
Right.
Those first couple of LL albums are just still so badass. I mean, there's a great story. I don't know if it's true or not, but the mythology of LL is that when he was like 17, he busted into a record label with a boombox of his music and just like, or got with a beat playing on his boombox and started rapping like when they're having a meeting. That's what I read anyway. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But
that's believable.
Yeah, I mean, he is LL. You know, he's a big dude. Yeah, he can bust in, goes, yo, what's up? So
yeah, he has one of the longest careers I've ever seen. You know,
he's awesome. He's awesome.
He's been big since before I was born. So it's like, you know, by the time you know I was listening to him, he already had albums, and he was able to have hits even after that.
LL and I are about the same age. I think he's probably about 50. I'm 50, and so I was in high school and LL was the same age as me and he was already famous. You know what I mean? Like that's where, you know, he's been at it since he was a kid. He's the man.
Yeah.
Love LL.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't that hurt your pride? Yeah, your ego. No.
Oh, man. Yeah, exactly. That's my whole life. You know what I mean?
Like, I look at LeBron.
LeBron's my age, and I'm like, oh, my God. How is this guy my age? He's accomplished everything.
Exactly.
So many people feel that way, but in my mind, I always go, if they can accomplish something that big, I can do it, too, if I want to bad enough. Maybe I want to eat more cheeseburgers than they want to eat.
That's
maybe,
fair.
There you go. Know, like,
maybe there are values that I have that they don't have, yeah, that may be making me not live out my dream or what I think I want to do with my life.
Yeah. It's just like the time, like the time, yeah, dilation just feels wrong. Like, how did he do all of that by this year? That doesn't make,
right,
sense.
Right.
Well, yeah, yes. It's just how do you fit it all in there? So yeah,
well, that's, no, and really, when you talk about that, you're talking about old school New York hip hop, right? Because that, mm-hmm, that's really what all those. I mean, the whole like whole Def Jam scene. With Russell Simmons and you know, the Beastie Boys and LL Cool J and Run DMC, they were all kids. They were real young, and they were making these huge hit records. I mean, it was a cool time. That's as far as hip hop goes. That, like, New York 80s hip hop is really where I grew up with that. I love that stuff. You know, so every Public Enemy, Big Daddy Kane, Eric B. Rakim, that stuff, and they were kids. You know, they were not. Big Daddy was not really a Big Daddy. Right, he was like, right, a 20-year-old kid, but he just looked like Big Daddy, you know.
A big, yeah, child.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool stuff. Yeah, great, yeah, stuff.
So, like we've been talking about inspiration. We do that a lot on this show, but like, what do you find keeps you inspired, right? So in those moments, such as what you were talking about earlier in this interview, like, when you're homeless or whatever, those moments, what made you go, I'm not going to give up? A, I'm not going to kill myself, which is the first choice. B, I'm not going to stop doing what I want to do. What in those dark, dark times made you continue doing what you do?
Probably my mom. Like, you know, I got a lot of student loans. Berkeley was not cheap. And right, when you die, they don't disappear. They just go to the next person.
Somebody else got paid, right?
Yeah, so I got to pay this shit off before I die,
right,
or else it's going to pass on to my family. So I would say that's the thing. There's zero, like, I don't get to make decisions based on how I feel.
Right.
I'm on a mission. So that conviction is kind of, I guess, what keeps me going is, you know, I'm not going to do it any specific way, but I'm never going to quit because, yeah, you know, I made a promise to myself. I made a promise to my family. You know, I made a promise to, you know, even my students, like, you know, what would that look like if they're like, oh, I learned from this guy that quit and then killed himself.
Right.
You know, like,
right,
that don't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what I found too is that when you're going through like a hard time like that, right? And especially as an artist, and you do, if you are lucky enough to have the support system, you got a family, you got friends, you got fans, whatever it is. And, you know, like what I found is that you realize that, Because I've always kind of assumed, like, you know, people probably think I'm just wasting my time. You know, this music thing is just Bob. That's just Bob being weird Bob, and he's making music and whatever, you know. But the truth is that the people that care about you actually care about what, right, you're doing, too. They care about what you're creating, and they care about seeing you fulfill, you know, what it is that you have inside of you, you know. And,
right,
you know, like I was talking about quit my job, I was making a lot of money, you know. It was a good job. And I figured my family, my girlfriend, my mom, everybody would be like, you know, you can't quit your job. You know, you've achieved so much. And all of them were like, that's a good idea.
Great idea.
Like, really? What? How is that a good idea? I'm going to go play guitar instead of making $100,000 a year in corporate America. They're like, yeah, you should. Okay, then, you know,
yeah,
right? That's people that care about you actually feel that way about you. You know what I mean? They believe in you. And I think that's pretty cool. You forget that.
Yeah.
I forget that. You know, I think everybody forgets that. It's nice. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Definitely good to have people in your corner.
There you go.
Yeah, man. I mean, I always have told people, I think I've told both of you this before. The way I like to explain it is, it's like we're driving in the desert and we've passed a sign a while back that says last gas station, next 2 miles or whatever for, you know,
100 miles or whatever, right? Yeah.
If you realize you only have 49 miles of gas left, you better hope to fuck that there's a gas station up ahead that you're eventually going to run into, mm-hmm. rather than going, I don't have enough gas to get back to that gas station. So putting yourself in that scenario, I'm not telling all you people to take huge risks, but putting yourself in a scenario where you have driven past the gas station, and you're going to fucking imagine that fucking gas station and that soft drink or that beer or that cigarette at that gas station that you assume is going to come. And you know what? Once we die, if we never made it to the gas station, we don't fucking know. So, I mean, that's just my opinion, but it's like, I know that I'm going to be successful because I will die trying, so I will die thinking that I will still be successful.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It's about what does successful mean? You know, you end up defining success for yourself.
I spent most of my life trying to figure that one out.
Will. You know, that's the thing. You will, because your definition of success will change as you go forward. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying. Right.
Right. So, you know, you're successful if you're being true to yourself and you're living a life that, you know, and I think if you're, you could say
you have to pay your bills.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could say I'm being true to myself, but yeah, sure. I'm being true to myself by by smoking crack every day. Well, that's not a very protective.
Right.
Being true.
Right.
I mean, George Clinton's been doing it for like 4 years. I mean,
there you go. Well, yeah, but he is George Clinton. He does everything. He's the man. P Funk, man. But I guess what I'm getting at though is that your goal is to improve upon whatever it is you want to improve on. You know, this is who I am and I want to be better at it. Maybe it's being a good person. Maybe it's being a good musician. Maybe it's being all the above. Maybe it's being a doctor, whatever. But if your goal is, this is me and I want to be better at me for the rest of my life. You guys are gone. Uh-oh, you disappeared.
Hello. Hey, we're going to use this phone, man, because apparently the phone charging cord is just not working half the time.
No, okay. You're right. Well, that's cool. I sent you a text. I just figured you guys call back in and we'll do those random questions. We've been at about an hour now anyway, so we probably should probably.
We got to get to talking about what he's working on now,
but yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
All right, so give me a second and then we'll use my phone.
Right on.
All right, what do
you mean, Oh, okay. Hold on a second.
Is it the same? I can just show him
the. Yeah, it's the same one. I'm still here, so I'm just.
All right, same one.
Yeah, I'm the one who's fucked up. All right. Did you text me it, or did you send it to me on Facebook?
It's Facebook. Here, I'll just tell you. I got the numbers right here. 387-770-4390.
Dialing it. Oh, password.
Yep. 595.
Lowercase D.
Yep.
595.
Yep. That's right.
You should remember down off the top of your head.
We did this a few times. Oh, okay. I'm going to hang up on you.
Recording.
Hey, all right. There we go.
We are back, sir.
Cool.
You got to edit that.
On the bright side, we can't possibly do worse than we did this time after this. So
I think it's
starting going to get on a good note. Yeah.
I think you're all good, man. It's all good.
Oh, let me turn you up.
On Tuesday.
Oh, it's already up.
Yeah, no, it was better there. Yeah, there you go. That's cool. It's you don't have it on HD, so it's not as wide as it was, widescreen. You see how mine's like bigger?
All right, HD, how do I do that?
Yeah, I think you got to do it when you're not connected and then just switch it to. What kind of phone do you have? Do you have an iPhone?
I got Android.
I don't even know. We tried this with the Android, it didn't have that setting. So,
yeah, you're not that loud for us.
How's the audio sound now?
I can hear you great. Yeah,
well, that's all we need as long as I.
Yeah, it's recording.
Exactly. Okay, back to where we were at. Let's see, what were we talking about?
You're going to do any questions?
I'm going to tell you something.
We were talking about smoking crack. I'm making a joke. I said we were talking about smoking crack. We were talking about.
Playing Xbox smoking crack with the president.
We were smoking crack with B-Funk, I think, is what we were doing.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to do the random questions, or you were going to say something else?
I was going to say something. I don't.
You wanted to talk about what Malachi's working on now?
Yeah. Let's hear about your music. I had a question about your music. Now, I was listening to your Spotify last night while playing games on Xbox, and you have a lot of remixes that you've been putting out, which I find is a smart thing to do.
So I actually didn't put those out. I've been doing work for hire. People pay me to do these remixes. Nice. I've been doing it for like 4 years, and then all of a sudden they just started coming out. I think there's like 20 up there. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Every time people did it and they tried to tag me, it would create a whole new profile on Spotify. So I had to release one song so I could claim my name and then connect all of them together. I did that last week, so my Spotify looks nice now. I never had a Spotify profile.
What's your name on Spotify so that everyone listening?
Just Malachi Mott. That's how you find me.
Right.
I have more than one brand, but that's the brand that you can find my newest stuff. Yeah. And
that's cool, too.
The second track is my favorite thing I think I've ever made.
Which one is it?
Onward. Yeah, that might be the best track that I've ever
made. Just answered my random question, so I have to think of another fucking question while you guys talk amongst yourselves.
Right. Well, I was just gonna ask about that. That's cool about the other people were putting the remixes up, because then you didn't have to clear the rights on anything.
Yeah, I don't have to do anything. People give me the files. I make the remix. They pay me up front. You know, I'm not getting any royalties on most of those.
Right.
And then they just uploaded them, and like I'm like, oh, this is like the smartest way I could have did this, because now I have a presence on Spotify, and I got paid to do it. So
You should check out because you should still get mechanical royalties, I think, on that stuff. Because you're a contributing artist on it, so you should check into that.
I'll see what I can work out, but you know, to be honest, I didn't know that people were going to even release the songs. It's all so most of the people who I work with, they never put the songs out. That's like one of the worst things about artists just being scared to release stuff. So I just started doing work for hire, because I'm like, why would I want points on a song that doesn't come out?
Right. Yeah,
you know? Right. So I'm like, all right.
Right.
And I'm just helping the average person too. They're not like famous people. You know, some of them actually do have a decent following, but they're not anyone that you would know.
That's
So, you know, I'm really enjoying.
You got a lot of listens on those songs, so, you know.
Some of them are pretty, yeah, that second one was crazy. And then the song that I released on there is called Bout to Blow. So if you want to hear, like, what I sound like.
Oh, I think that's the one that I like the most.
Yeah, I mean, that's my song.
I think that one is the one I always like to tell.
Oh yeah, I got
it. And it's only a minute long, so it's in and out. Yeah, I'm glad you like it. Thanks.
I don't know if you can hear it. I'm playing it right now.
You gotta share the audio with the Zoom then.
I know. I'll stop. I was just being funny. But yeah, I'm gonna put it.
One of my favorites. I'm gonna try to do like a song a month like that. Just keep them short.
Everybody simple. Book it out. Put them out. It's fun time.
Yeah, and confident. I'm trying to help everybody just feel confident.
In this day and this climate of the world today, we need to be as confident as possible.
Agreed.
Yeah. Man, so
it's not easy.
What do we have in store for us as your fans? What can we be looking out for? I know you talked about wanting to play out
more. Yeah, I'm gonna start playing live. I don't know what it's gonna look like yet. But I've decided, you know, within the next 3 months, I'm going to figure it out and have like something where I can start performing live and having my brand come to the people instead of people having to come to me. I can honestly say that I've been hesitant to do that because it's like a full-time job on top of having a full-time job and two part-time jobs. So I might have to let something go and figure out how to have this supplement my income instead. But you know, I'm really looking forward to being with the people and sharing my energy and getting their energy.
That's cool.
That is very
and
good.
All the hot girls that are going to want to talk.
There you go.
All the hot girls that are on Zoom.
Not on Zoom.
No moral needle women for you tonight. No chatterbait tonight.
Chatterbait. That's hilarious.
Okay, but no, yes, for real. Now I'm going to say the word upcoming, and I just talked about chatterbait, but anyways, what upcoming releases do you have that we can maybe
look
forward to? Nothing, you just wing it?
I do work for hire,
right?
And the amount of energy that it takes to do that doesn't leave me with anything left in the tank for myself.
Right.
So at some point, I'm going to have to quit doing the work for hire because I can't do that and produce my own music.
Right.
I've tried, but literally it's like a gas tank. You run out and you have to wait for it to kind of fill back up.
Oh, for inspiration?
No, just the amount of time you can spend
time,
in front of the computer. You know, not even inspiration wise. Like there's only a certain amount of time and then my brain starts going,
it's funny to say that.
I think Melende told me it's called like noise blindness or some shit where everything starts to jumble together. Your ears get drained, and it's like one tone. And I've had that happen many times, many, many times. So anything, what's your biggest long-term goal that you're willing to share with us?
Biggest long-term goal, biggest long-term goal that I can share that would actually make sense is having a team where we are just cranking out like 10 songs a day. Go somewhere. So it's not like 10 songs and we're holding on to them.
Right, 10
it's like,
songs.
Yeah, like we're getting hired to do the 10. So every single song is going somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, we're just banging them out. So that's what I'm working on. That's like 3 years from now. I'll have that.
No, but that's I think a reasonable goal considering the quality of music I've heard you produce even years ago.
Well, thank you, so, man.
I really wanted to compliment you on how you mix the vocals in those remixes, because like I'm working with vocals a lot. Ever since my second friend died, I've been writing remixes for some reason. That's my coping mechanism. So, for instance, I've been staying up writing for 17 hours because my brain doesn't want to, like, deal with life, I guess. But your vocals sounded clean, like, perfectly clean. It was great.
Okay, thanks.
Any hints on that?
Start with the vocal.
Okay, wow.
Don't move forward until it sounds like $1 million.
So different. I'll have to try that.
Well, once you mix it one time, you don't have to do anything else.
Right.
You just like get that first mix, and then on that track, you can do whatever you want editing wise. But once you like, don't move until the vocal sounds like $1 million.
Right.
And the reason why I do that is because the singer is usually my client.
Right.
And
right.
If I don't make them sound good, they're not gonna okay the song. I'm gonna get paid. So I give myself any instrument except for the vocal. So I will spend like 2 hours on the vocal after I organize the session. I'll spend 2 hours just making sure that I dialed it in so perfect. And then I do the whole remix, and then I go back and I dial in the vocal some more. You know?
Right.
So
yeah, one thing me and Bob have talked about is how artists don't ever mix their own vocal loud enough usually.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they tend to turn it forth down because you know what you said. And you don't want to hear what you said.
You heard it.
You don't want to hear you.
And your voice sounds pretty lame all the time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. You know, I remember, I'm a big Hendrix fan, a huge Hendrix fan. Jim Keel, I tell you, that's kind of the style of guitar play and everything. I just love Jimmy. Jimmy's got a great voice, right? I love Jimmy's voice. He hated his voice so much that when he recorded, he would turn his back. He'd get in the ISO booth and turn his back to the engineer so nobody could see him singing. So he would be like sitting like in the closet by himself singing and wouldn't let anybody look at him because he was so insecure about his own voice. Jimi Hendrix.
I feel like I would be insecure about mine too if I didn't have to deal with all the singers and how insecure they were. Right. It's really annoying when someone sounds like $1 million when they sing and they're like, I don't know. So like me dealing with that all the time makes it so I can't be a hypocrite, you know what I mean? Like, I am insecure about my voice, but I'm not going to not put it out. Like, I'm going to do it and then put it out and then make the next one and put it out. And, you know, I also found, you know, a few tricks to make my voice sound a little more manly, you know, and once I figured those things out, I was like, okay, I like this sound. Yeah, and now I have the formula. You know, it took me a while to figure out what vocal sound I wanted for me, but...
Right.
I bought a new microphone, and I'm loving recording myself. It's fun.
Thanks. Yeah, dude. Those vocals sounded so clean. I mean, not that my vocal sounds bad, but I'm using like acoustic versions of the songs that I found on fucking YouTube. So it's kids recording themselves, and then I make a full-on banger with double vocals sometimes, like. I didn't know how dumb of an idea and as smart of an idea that would be because like. It sounds fresh.
It's cool stuff. It's cool. Yeah. But Kilo, for somebody that does, you know, mostly instrumental electronic music, you know, you do vocals great. I mean, that was the thing that really the biggest improvement you made on my music was that. I gave you my tracks, and then suddenly, you know, that was the first thing my girlfriend said. She's like, I can hear you sing, you know, you sound good, you know?
Bumping that frequency we talked about last night where, like, the human hearing is programmed to hear. I'm just bumping that in this vocal. And even in the mix, not that that's all I'm doing, but that does do a little bit, in my opinion, to why you hear yourself now.
Right.
So,
well, that's awesome. Anyway, we should probably get to the random questions.
Now that I have
to take another
one, I did want to say one last memory with Malachi that I was going to bring up and the phone died.
Oh, okay.
When we were talking about like things are always changing, right? And like your professor and stuff. I remember a time in my life, which I don't remember why I was down at this moment in my life, but Malachi had come over and we were hanging out. I think maybe I was changing and we were just chilling. And I was talking about being unsatisfied with life and stuff. And I said, which to me now it sounds dumb, back then it didn't. I was like, I just want things to be the way they used to be. Remember I said I want to be the old me?
I don't remember that. So what did I say?
He was smart and he said, don't want to be like the old you. Want to be better than the old you. And know that you're constantly changing. And I paraphrased it, but it's like, that's what that brought to my mind when we were talking about your professor. It's like, don't want things to go back to where you were. Mm-hmm. Want to go forward to where they are.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, yes. Kilo, the Buddha, would tell
you. You don't even know it.
Yeah, right. What did you say, Bob?
I was going to say the Buddha would tell you that the past doesn't exist anyway. So you're pining for something that's imaginary, that doesn't, it's not even really there. The only thing that exists is this right here where you are right now. So, live that. Live that moment. That's the thing.
Okay, let's live the moment of you asking your question while I continue to think about
it. All right, what was my question? Oh, okay, yeah, I like my question. And so what we were doing, Malachi, but this is, we act like we've been doing this forever. Really, Kilo and I just talk all the time. But what we talked about was that with these questions, but we each could ask a random question, and then we each have to answer that same question. Oh, yeah. So, mm-hmm. So anyway, my question is, and Malachi, you answer first, being that you are the, you know, the guest of honor.
And Malachi gets to ask a question. I forgot to.
All right, I'll come up with one. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. You can ask one too. All right. So if you could hang with anybody in history, who would it be?
Anyone in history.
You interpret the question any way you want. It could be somebody, history could be last week or it could be 1,000 years ago. It's entirely up to you.
I'm going to say Dalai Lama.
Yay, there you go. Right on. Now, see, that's an interesting question because the Dalai Lama is an entity that is reborn, you know, with each generation. Right. So,
when I said, you don't even know which one I'm talking about.
Don't know which one, right? Exactly. Could be 1,000 years ago. Could be today. That's a good answer. I like it.
That's what we were saying earlier. I was saying, well, what's history mean? And he said, well, probably dead by now. So you kind of got it right. You technically snuck past the curtain of like dead, but not dead.
There you go.
Well, I'm with it.
So, Kilo, you got to
put his brain and just be in his energy.
Right on, man. Right on.
Yeah, no, it would be good, dog.
The greatest thing about the Dalai Lama, and everything's great about it. I'm reading a book actually by the Dalai Lama. A speech he gave that was annotated and turned into a book, right? But in any case, the great thing about the Dalai Lama is he's just smiling all the time. That guy has been, he's been kicked out of his own country, the country he's supposed to be the leader, the spiritual leader of. He hasn't been able to go back for decades. He's still happy all the time. It's amazing.
And also, he's the last one. They messed up the chain, so he's going to be the last one.
Oh,
and
really?
They asked him about it. Yeah, Google it and watch the video of him talking about it. They interviewed him and asked him.
That's crazy.
And he answered it with a smile on his face.
That's crazy.
I was like, yo, if he can't be down by knowing that that tradition that has lasted hundreds of years is now going to come to an end. Like, why am I crying over, you know, my job? Why am I crying over this girl? You know, like, exactly. It really put things in perspective.
Yeah. That's
cool. So, hey, Kilo, what's your answer?
Oh, yeah, we got an answer. Oh,
yeah, you got an answer. Who's your person from history, Kilo?
Oh, fuck.
Come on, you had all day to think about this.
Okay. Originally, probably my answer is the Buddha. Because, I would like to know if he was real, honestly.
Yeah,
I would also like to rub his belly, which that's a different Buddha. But but no, I just want to be like, hey, bro, thanks for all the things you've done for people. Mm-hmm. I just want you to know, like, we are very grateful that you taught people to not be dumbass and how to be happy when life sucks. There you go. I can't say it better than that.
Either
him or Jesus, but they both did the same type of thing. So
I got to answer now too, right? I don't know the answer to this. I have about 50 answers, obviously. I'd probably, I'll just keep it to music and say it'd be
either.
Huh? Huh?
That's not fair. We didn't pick music, people.
Okay.
Music is what he wants. That's what he wants.
Okay. You want me to pick a spiritual leader then? You nailed the two best ones already. I'm not going to.
You're like, you used the two Buddhists up. I got nothing more.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, no. Go music. Go music.
If it's music, I would say probably Hendrix or John Lennon. And probably Hendrix. I'd say Hendrix. That's who I'd want to.
I actually predicted that while you were talking.
Yeah, there you go. It's got to be one of the two. Those are two big idols.
So, all right, Kilo, your question.
Right? Okay, so my question before you spoil things was supposed to be what song that you've written are you the proudest of and that you like the most? But you already answered our question earlier in this interview for that. So I'm going to ask you, what is one song that you listen to that will never get old? Like, for instance, I cannot listen to All Stars all day or even twice a day.
Song that will never get old. ABC, Jackson 5.
Oh, that's a great song. Right on. Good answer. Good
answer.
What
about you, Bob?
Me? A song that would never get, that I could listen to and it never gets old. You know, I probably, there's so many, honestly. I'll say Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones. I could probably just listen to the Stones all the time. They're pretty chill. But yeah,
mine is completely different genres than you guys, different energy, different time period.
I mean, this is something magical about your song.
I know, right? I was thinking, because I was thinking of songs I like, and I'm thinking, well, if that came on right now, I would not stop interviewing you to listen to it.
Yeah, but that's not what Jake question is. Which one doesn't get old?
That's right.
The song that I will always listen to and repeat over and over again if it comes on is Ultimate by Denzel Curry. That song, the way it comes in, the way that song is formatted, I'm like, this is the best song. It's not the best song in my opinion, but it's the song that will turn me up the fastest and keep me there. So there we go. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay, all right. Your turn to ask.
Malachi.
If you could talk to your 14-year-old self.
Oh.
What would you say? One piece of advice.
What I thought of first is inappropriate. So I'm gonna like, I don't think I'm
defer to Bob on this one.
Are you what? I'll go first. You want me to go first? I have an easy. I got a very easy answer on this one because 14 is when I started drinking. So right. I would say, don't. Just freaking don't. It's not worth it. It's a waste of time. You'll be better off if you don't. That's what I would tell my 14-year-old self.
Fair enough.
Okay. Which is basically what I told my kid, too. So there you go.
Oh, now I have to go since Malachi asked a question. So my initial response that's in my head that we're not going to say on the show is you can't get anyone's throat pregnant. Like, that's my initial response to that question.
I didn't even hear. What'd you say?
You can't get her throat pregnant. I know. That's why I said not my answer, and no one ever heard me say this.
Sorry, it's not a family show anymore.
Not anymore. I guess it's something that I live by now, which is trust yourself more.
There you go.
Learn that you got your own back, because you're going to have your own back a lot in life, and you need to learn now that you will always be there for you.
That's a much better answer, Kilo.
Those are very, very different paradox answers right there.
Very good.
Yeah.
I wound up her back, not her, never.
Wait, but Malachi, you didn't answer that question.
I did. I'm thinking of my answer. It's tough. I guess I'd say something like, it doesn't matter how book smart you are, you're still going to be a dumbass in the streets.
That's true.
There you go.
That's right a good on. One. That's a very good one.
All right,
man. Well, I think we're done with this interview for now.
I think so. And
hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Malachi, do you have anything else you'd like to say? Anything at all, even if it's throats and pregnant?
No, man, just in life, all you got to do is be good to yourself, be good to the people around you. How about this? I'm going to take a quote from Big Sean. The grass isn't green on the other side, it's green where you water it.
I've never heard that, but
that's one of his songs.
I like that.
That's good.
Be grateful for what you have.
Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week for our next episode, we'll have somebody from the UK on.
Well, first of all, Malachi, thank you very much. Really, this
I appreciate you being here.
This is fun stuff. I really enjoyed it, and I'm really glad you came. I thank you.
Yeah.
And cool. And then the next week we got my buddy Tim Pitt, who is a producer in London. And he's known professionally as Equalization. He's from England, so it's Equalization with an S, isn't it? I think you spell it with a Z in America. But anyway, he's a cool dude, very interesting. He's been producing records since the 80s, and neat dude. So that'll be next week. But Malachi Mott, thank you so much. Everybody, go to MalachiMott.com. Go look up Malachi on the Spotify, and and we'll have all the links when this goes live. Yeah. We'll have links for everything. So, rock on.
Yes.
No doubt. Thank you so much,
everybody.
All right, cool. Folks.
Perfect.
Adios.
Hey, let's take a minute.